I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Joe Biden used his final presidential address before the United Nations General Assembly to urge unity in the face of challenges, including conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Hope, unity, and service. President Joe Biden's parting message to world leaders in his final speech at the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. But it was this line about his decision not to seek re-election that garnered the most applause from the audience, which included leaders from the body's 193 member states.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
Washington's strong support of Israel has tested its standing at the UN, where many members are critical of Israel's action, both in Gaza and now in Lebanon. On Tuesday, the head of the international body warned of what he called politically indefensible and morally intolerable impunity. This annual event is a chance for the world's governments to discuss shared challenges and shared visions. The big question now, from Gaza to Ukraine to Sudan, what are they going to do about it? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
U.S. officials say the Biden administration will send Ukraine an undisclosed number of medium-range cluster bombs and an array of rockets, artillery, and armored vehicles in a military aid package totaling about $375 million. Officials expect an announcement on Wednesday as global leaders meet at the UN General Assembly, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky uses his appearance there to shore up support and persuade the U.S. to allow his troops to use long-range weapons to strike deeper into Russia. This is VOA News. Israel's military said an airstrike on Beirut killed the commander of Hezbollah's missile and rocket force on Tuesday as cross-border attacks by both sides increased. Lebanese officials claim more than 500 people have been killed since Israel launched heavy strikes on Monday. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh reports.
Israel's military leader said the Air Force also conducted extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets, including weapons storage facilities and dozens of launchers that were aimed at Israeli territory. Hezbollah said it launched rockets on Tuesday at the Dado military base in northern Israel and attacked the Atlit naval base south of Haifa with drones. Israel's new offensive against Hezbollah has stoked fears that nearly a year of conflict between Israel and the militant Palestinian group Hamas in Gaza could destabilize the Middle East.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh. A Haitian group in a town in the U.S. state of Ohio on Tuesday filed citizen criminal charges against former President Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance. AP correspondent Haya Pandwani reports.
The leader of a national nonprofit representing Haitians has filed criminal charges against Trump and Vance over chaos and threats experienced in Springfield, Ohio, after they spread false claims about legal immigrants. Their lawyer says the Haitian Bridge Alliance filed the charges under a private citizen statute because local prosecutors haven't acted. The group seeks arrest warrants against Trump and Vance. More than 30 bomb threats were directed at state and local government buildings and schools, prompting closures, the assignment of additional law enforcement protection, and security cameras. Some of the city's Haitian residents have also said they feared for their safety. I'm Haya Pinjwani.
Charges brought by private citizens are rare but not unheard of in Ohio. State law requires a hearing to take place before the affidavit can move forward. The man who authorities say staked out Donald Trump for 12 hours on his golf course in Florida and wrote of his desire to kill him was indicted on Tuesday on charges he attempted to assassinate the former U.S. president. Ryan Wesley Routh was initially charged with two federal firearms offenses. The upgraded charges reflect the Justice Department's assessment he plotted to kill the Republican nominee, aiming a rifle through bushes surrounding Trump's West Palm Beach golf course while Trump was playing golf. Routh left behind a note in which he described his intention. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. J.D. Vance and Tim Walz have just ended their one and only vice presidential debate ahead of November's U.S. election.
So you've got to stop the bleeding. You've got to re-implement Donald Trump's border policies, build the wall, re-implement deportations.
We have analysis of the debate. Iran fires dozens of missiles at Israel, sending millions of civilians to bomb shelters. Former Zambian President Edgar Lungu accuses current President Hichilema of colluding with the judiciary to prevent him from contesting the 2026 presidential election. The government says Lungu's allegation is fraudulent. The motion to impeach Kenya's deputy president is presented in parliament.
We have laid the basis to demonstrate that the deputy president has violated many, many articles of our constitution in regard to the national unity, in regard to his stature as a state officer.
And Nigeria opts for muted Independence Day celebration amid insecurity and struggling economy. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Republican Party Vice Presidential Candidate J.D. Vance and Democratic Party Vice Presidential Candidate Tim Walz had their one and only debate on Tuesday night ahead of the November presidential election. They discussed a wide range of topics, including the economy, foreign policy, abortion, and immigration.
Senator Vance, your campaign is pledging to carry out the largest mass deportation plan in American history and to use the U.S. military to do so. Could you be more specific about exactly how this will work? For example, would you deport parents who have entered the U.S. illegally and separate them from any of their children who were born on U.S. soil? You have 2 minutes.
So first of all, Margaret, before we talk about deportations, we have to stop the bleeding. We have a historic immigration crisis because Kamala Harris started and said that she wanted to undo all of Donald Trump's border policies. 94 executive orders suspending deportations, decriminalizing illegal aliens, massively increasing the asylum fraud that exists in our system. That has opened the floodgates. And what it's meant is that a lot of fentanyl is coming into our country. I had a mother who struggled with opioid addiction and has gotten clean. I don't want people who are struggling with addiction to be deprived of their second chance because Kamala Harris let in fentanyl into our communities at record levels. So you've got to stop the bleeding. You've got to re-implement Donald Trump's border policies, build the wall, re-implement deportations. And that gets me to your point, Margaret, about what do we actually do? So we've got 20, 25 million illegal aliens who are here in the country. What do we do with them? I think the first thing that we do is we start with the criminal migrants. About a million of those people have committed some form of crime in addition to crossing the border illegally. I think you start with deportations on those folks. And then I think you make it harder for illegal aliens to undercut the wages of American workers. A lot of people will go home if they can't work for less than minimum wage in our own country. And by the way, that'll be really good for our workers who just want to earn a fair wage for doing a good day's work. And the final point, Margaret, is you ask about family separation. Right now in this country, Margaret, we have 320,000 children that the Department of Homeland Security has effectively lost. Some of them have been sex trafficked. Some of them hopefully are at homes with their families. Some of them have been used as drug trafficking mules. The real family separation policy in this country is unfortunately Kamala Harris's wide open southern border.
Do you care to respond to any of those specific allegations, including that the vice president is, quote, letting in fentanyl and using kids as drug mules, among other things, regarding children?
The drug mule is not true, but I will say about this, about the fentanyl, because this is a crisis of this, the opioid crisis. And the good news on this is the last 12 months saw the largest decrease in opioid deaths in our nation's history, 30% decrease in Ohio. But there's still more work to do. But let's go back to this on immigration. Kamala Harris was the attorney general of the largest state, a border state in California. She's the only person in this race who prosecuted transnational gangs for human trafficking and drug interventions. But look, we all want to solve this. Most of us want to solve this, and that is the United States Congress. That's the Border Patrol agents. That's the Chamber of Commerce. That's most Americans out here. That's why we had the fairest and the toughest bill on immigration that this nation's seen. It was crafted by a conservative senator from Oklahoma, James Lankford. I know him. He's super conservative, but he's a man of principle, wants to get it done. Democrats and Republicans worked on this piece of legislation. The Border Patrol said, this is what we need in here. These are the experts. And the Chamber of Commerce and the Wall Street Journal said, pass this thing. Kamala Harris helped get there. 1,500 new border agents, detection for drugs, DOJ money to speed up these the adjudications on this, just what America wants. But as soon as I was getting ready to pass and actually tackle this, Donald Trump said no, told them to vote against it because it gives him a campaign issue. It gives him, what would Donald Trump talk about if we actually did some of these things? And they need to be done by the legislature. You can't just do this through the executive branch. So look, we have the options to do this. Donald Trump had 4 years. He had 4 years to do this. And he promised you, America, how easy it would be. I'll build you a big, beautiful wall, and Mexico will pay for it. Less than 2% of that wall got built, and Mexico didn't pay a dime.
The vice presidential candidates of the Republican and Democratic parties, J.D. Vance and Tim Walz, speaking Tuesday evening during their one and only debate ahead of the November presidential election. Joining us live for analysis of the U.S. vice presidential debate is Jennifer Cook, professor of practice in international affairs and director of the Institute for African Studies and the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. Good morning to you, Jennifer.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you, James.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you.
So, Jennifer, I guess it was no coincidence that the debate opened with the crisis in the Middle East. How do you think the candidates handled the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall in the debate, I think J.D. Vance came across as fairly smooth and polished speaker. Although substantively, I think Governor Walz matched him. In that opening question, it was a bit of a rocky start for the governor. Although he pointed to the need to preserve alliances, he pointed to the Trump administration's withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. And Vance kind of insisted on the Trump position of peace through strength and kind of effective deterrence. To be honest, neither was particularly substantive on that particular issue. I think Vance was a bit smoother in his delivery.
We know that immigration and abortion have dominated both our candidates' campaign messages. How did the candidates do in addressing the issue?
Yes, those two issues, yeah, hot topics in the debates, both in the presidential and in this debate. Again, and you played the clip of Vance answering the question on immigration. He didn't answer the specific question that was asked of him. How would the Trump administration deport these many millions of illegal immigrants? But kind of played up on the immigrants are taking jobs and the criminality and the fentanyl coming over the border. I think on this one, Vance responded with, you know, what Kamala Harris has also said is that there was bipartisan legislation worked on by both Democrats and Republicans, toughest border policies. But Donald Trump intervened in that process and said, please don't pass this. The borders, solving the border issue would be a detriment to his campaign. And I think Governor Walz made this point again and again, saying, you know, you like the talking points, but where are the solutions? You're not on board with the solutions. So on that one, those are the positions that the two lead candidates have tracked out. I will say that this debate was much more civil than many of the debates, presidential or vice presidential, that we've seen in recent years. So they did not launch personal attacks on each other. Vance did not go into his kind of very racist screeds against immigrants eating cats and dogs. I think the challenge for Vance in this was to kind of humanize himself and perhaps distance himself from the very harsh rhetoric of the Trump administration or the Trump campaign. And for Walz, it was to show that for all his, you know, kind of folksy demeanor, he has the policy chops. And I think they both succeeded to some extent on that.
So do you think the debate will impact the November election?
Vice presidential debates rarely have a discernible impact on the election. I think the key thing for both was not to make a terrible gaffe that would be remembered, or a terrible error, or have a very awkward moment. I think it does. I think it can kind of affect people's perception of the aura of the campaign. I will say the most heated moment of this came when J.D. Vance was asked whether Trump actually lost the 2020 election, and he would not answer that. And for all the good civility that had preceded that, Governor Walz asked him, I cannot believe that you cannot answer that question. And that the phrase that stood out to me in that was his question, who is going to honor democracy and who is going to honor Donald Trump, if J.D. Vance was unable to answer that question. Again, not clear whether these will impact the final election. I don't think either made terrible gaffes that the other side can use against them. But it was more substantive, I would say, than even the presidential debate had been.
Jennifer, thank you so much again for joining us live on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James.
That's Jennifer Cook, the professor of practice in international affairs and director of the Institute for African Studies at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. Iran fired dozens of missiles at Israel, sending millions of Israelis to bomb shelters. The attack came as Israel launched a ground incursion into Lebanon to attack the Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah. Linda Grasstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel's anti-missile system shot down most of an Iranian missile barrage fired Tuesday, and there were no reports of injuries. Iran said the attack was in retaliation for the killings of the leaders of two proxy militant groups. Israel killed Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah last week, and Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh was killed in July. Israel has not claimed responsibility for that killing. Israel's ground operation targeted the Hezbollah militant group and is limited in scope, says military spokesman Daniel Hagari.
Our soldiers entered Hezbollah's underground infrastructures, exposed Hezbollah's hidden weapon caches, and seized and destroyed the weapons, including advanced Iranian-made weapons. Overall, IDF soldiers exposed and dismantled over 700 Hezbollah terror assets during these operations. And there's a lot more work to do.
Hezbollah responded with rockets fired at northern and central Israel. Israeli forces warned residents of southern Lebanon to leave their homes for their own safety. Again, Army spokesman Daniel Hagari.
Our war is not with the people of Lebanon. It's with Hezbollah. This is a clear message to the international community.
Israeli analysts say Israel has struck a serious blow to the Iranian proxy group over the past few weeks, including the assassination of leader Hassan Nasrallah and several other senior Hezbollah officials. Ayal Khaluta is a former Israeli national security advisor.
The amount of operational accomplishments that Israel has fortunately been able to do and to perform is immense. And I think that this exemplifies the not only the capabilities, but also the seriousness in which Israel has been preparing towards Lebanon. For sure, this has been a blow, a surprise for them in many ways, to them, to the Iranians and others.
But others caution that Hezbollah is still a formidable enemy. Colonel Miri Eisen is the director of the International Institute for Counterterrorism in Israel and a specialist on Hezbollah.
I would say that the biggest focus for me as a person looking at this, as somebody from the outside inside, is the arsenal and the weapons themselves, but the capabilities that Hezbollah built adjacent along Israel's northern border.
Israel says it does not intend to stay in Lebanon long term. Israeli officials say they just want to way for the 63,000 Israeli residents who were forced to leave their homes almost a year ago to return. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 2nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nigeria on Tuesday marked the 64th anniversary of its independence in a generally somber mood. Persistent inflation, widespread insecurity, and unpopular economic reforms have left many Nigerians feeling frustrated and pessimistic. In comments on Tuesday, President Bola Tinubu acknowledged these challenges, but said that ongoing reforms will lead to prosperity. Gibson Emeka reports.
We have leveled 11 charges against the deputy president, majorly around violating our own constitution. We are a constitutional democracy, and state officers are under public duty and a constitutional duty to uphold the constitution. And so we have laid the basis to demonstrate that the deputy president has violated many, many articles of our constitution in regard to the national unity, in regard to his is a state officer in terms of the dignity, respect, integrity that goes with the office that he holds. We have also demonstrated that he has committed corruption and economic crimes related, and we are also going to demonstrate that he has been insubordinating the presidency.
Some people are saying that you are playing the 2027 election politics.
This is not about politics. This is purely about the law and the requirements of the law on the officer holding the office of the deputy president. There is nothing about politics. When you commit a crime, you cannot hide under politics. We will be able to substantiate, and the House will be able to make a decision. Impeachments are not new. They have been done in most of the mature democracies. Impeachments are done every other time. This may be new to us, but under our old constitution, we did impeach at the time a deputy president. So it is not about politics. It is about the law. It is about fidelity to the Constitution.
So where does the proceeding go from here?
Well, the Speaker has guided the House this afternoon that the next step will be to conduct public participation, because we are removing a person who was a running mate to a presidential candidate, and therefore the people had a say in his assumption of office. Therefore, we also need the people to have a say in his possible removal. So there will be countrywide public participation for the people to give their views on Friday, this coming Friday. Then the law requires that we dispense with the motion within 7 days. Next week, Tuesday, has been reserved as a full day for debate. I will move the motion in terms of laying and demonstrating the allegations, the evidence, and the witnesses who will be supporting my motion on Tuesday morning. Members of Parliament will have the opportunity to debate. The Deputy President has been allocated time from, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. to also come and defend himself, after which the House will debate and possibly make a decision before midnight on Tuesday. After that, the law requires we relay the decision of the National Assembly to the Senate. The Senate is, in this case, the trial chamber. They will process whatever decision has been brought. They will also hear the deputy president, and they will also have a say.
That was Mwenge Mutuse, a member of Kenya's parliament from the ruling United Democratic Alliance, UDA party. He was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Former Zambian President Edgar Lungu has accused President Hakainde Hichilema of colluding with the judiciary to prevent him from contesting the 2026 presidential election. The court ruled in 2021 that Lungu was eligible to run for president. Now, ahead of the 2026 vote, some Zambians have petitioned the court, challenging his eligibility. In a nationwide speech Tuesday night, Lungu accused the petitioners of being surrogates of the ruling United Party for National Development, the UNDP. Emmanuel Nwamba is the spokesperson of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party.
Well, he was exposing a plot in which President Hakainde Hichilema is being accused of plotting heavily to stop him from participating in the elections of 2026. President Lungu put it that the petitioners that have taken this matter to the Constitutional Court are surrogates of the UPND, the ruling party. He explained that we have seen pictures of these surrogates with President Hakainde Hichilema, and his concern to them was that he has information that the judiciary is now participating in these plots instead of being an independent arbiter of differences or issues that arise. He put it very clearly that this matter has been settled not once but many times by the same constitutional court. And the reopening of this matter is illegal and is urging the judiciary not to participate in these schemes that are being perpetrated by President Hakainde Hichilema.
This is stemming from the 2021 general election. Was it decided that President Lungu could participate or cannot participate?
Yes, so there were various petitions before the Constitutional Court before we went to the general elections in 2021. And the Constitutional Court resolved that matter and ruled that President Edgar Lungu was eligible to stand and is still eligible to stand in 2026. However, when the new government came in office, they began to have this particular judgment overturned. But, you know, the settlement of the court, the same court, it can't change its own verdict, but there's intense political pressure that the Constitutional Court should overturn its earlier decisions of 2017, 2020, and 2021. It has ruled three times on this matter, and it has stated that Edgar Lungu is eligible to stand.
Emmanuel Nwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with us from Lusaka. An opposition coalition in Senegal has chosen former President Macky Sall as its lead candidate for November parliamentary elections, two officials of the ex-majority party said on Tuesday. Former minister Massou Faure told the French news agency AFP that Sall had accepted the nomination. Senegal is headed for a new standoff between longtime rival Sall and Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko if the declarations of candidacy are approved by the Directorate General of Election in coming days. Sonko was imprisoned more than 7 months ago under Sall's rule and was banned from running in March presidential election. Sonko's Pastel party confirmed on Tuesday that he has been named the head of his party for the November 17 parliamentary poll. 3 years of political turmoil ended when Sonko's replacement, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, beat the incumbent president's successor, Amadou Ba, in the first round of the presidential poll this year with over 54% of the vote. And that's it for this Wednesday, October 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
Hello, this is Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30.